Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge listeners who care about, or care for, or may themselves have become someone with a disability. Today we welcome Dr. Gary Block, a family physician with St. Michael's Hospital. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Thank you very much.
Gary, what's your position at St. Mike's?
I work at one of the St. Mike's four family medicine clinics, and I mean, my practice focuses mainly on what I call inner city medicine. Generally, most of my clients live in poverty.
Right.
And I see a mix of people who are living on the street and who are homeless, recent immigrants and new refugees, and quite a few lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered.
You're right on Church Street there, practically.
Yeah, exactly. So I do quite a lot of work with HIV.
Dr. Gordon Guyatt told me you're very knowledgeable about the situation of people who require the special diet supplement. What's your understanding of your place, which is fairly prominent? You've already written a letter to Sandra Pupatello, right? Or you've signed a letter.
That's right. I mean, I spearheaded a campaign to send a letter to the minister. And Sandra Pupatello is the Minister of Community and Social Services, who obviously oversees welfare. The letter was actually signed and sent from 60 healthcare providers.
Yeah.
And the general thrust of the letter was to call for a raise in welfare rates and a raise in social assistance rates, which has been the overall drive of this campaign around the special diet as well.
Right.
And just to explain, this campaign was initiated by the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, which noticed that there was this provision in the welfare legislation for the special diet supplement,
right,
which is up to $250 a month that can be provided for a welfare recipient on the basis that they have a medical condition that requires this additional money.
I've read the form, and I think what the form says is that their doctor certifies that they need this special diet consideration, and that's kind of the beginning and the end of it right now, isn't it?
Well, you may have actually seen an older version of the form, because the form has changed about four or five times in the last 5 months.
Okay.
And the current form does state that the person needs to be certified to have a medical condition.
Right.
And that certification needs to be made by a physician, a nurse practitioner, a dietitian, or a midwife.
I see. Is this form been introduced very recently?
This form was in place for people who were on Ontario Disability in the past.
Uh-huh.
It's now been put in place for people who are on welfare, Ontario Works as well.
Well, the diet's been available to them both all along, but
yes.
the qualifier of the medical condition has been expanded to include welfare, as far as you know.
Absolutely. And just to be clear, I mean, my position, the position of the healthcare providers who have been involved in this, is that poverty itself is a medical condition that warrants the full special diet supplement.
Yes.
So whether or not there a medical condition is required, it doesn't actually change our intervention in this case.
Right.
Poverty is actually the greatest risk factor for ill health that we know today. And it's actually been shown through very good studies to be a risk factor for a huge range of conditions, but including things like heart disease, diabetes, cancer, and many others.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I mean, it's the largest risk factor we know.
Mm-hmm.
And the form itself does not specify which medical conditions qualify for which diet.
Right.
Although it is quite clear on the form that some of them are geared towards certain specific medical conditions. There's a stipulation for a diabetic diet, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and one for low salt, which would seem to fit with heart disease or high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, if you examine the form and some of these diets that are more specifically geared towards medical conditions, some of those so-called medical conditions are actually risk factors for poor health,
right,
like poverty.
Okay.
And an example of that is high blood pressure, which is a risk factor for heart disease. It causes no symptoms on its own. And similarly, we say that poverty is a risk factor to the kind of conditions that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
So through this campaign, we're basically saying that social assistance rates are so low at this point that people are living in such dire poverty that they're incredibly high risk for a variety of health problems.
A lot of the conditions described are suitable for far more than one medical issue, too. Things that in the minds of a bureaucrat may be suited to one condition, but may in fact apply to many conditions, and conditions that of which a bureaucrat is unaware.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we increasingly counsel around good nutrition as a general approach to keeping yourself healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And we certainly believe that poor people or people living in poverty and people on social assistance have as much of a right to that as anyone else.
Yeah. It seems that it's not fashionable to recognize that right in our society, that this is one of the last groups that, without fear of being politically correct, you can beat on and beat on and beat on, and not, you know, no major force is going to oppose you. Certainly the Human Rights Commission isn't going to oppose you. Their budget's been cut twice. And even if it were, they're not focused on disability. They're not focused on nutrition. They're not focused on health. And they're not focused on subtle forms of discrimination. The legal clinics are paid by the Ontario government, so they're now in a very difficult position to, in fact, oppose Ontario government policy. In Toronto, you're fortunate you have some very radical clinics who will do that anyway.
That's right.
Am I correct? There seems to be no powerful protection for their rights in this regard. You're just poor people, and they're stereotyped.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I think it's very difficult to protect these rights, and I think any process to protect them is a very long process. As you mentioned, there are a number of people, of lawyers and people in the legal profession in Toronto who have been involved in this effort.
Yeah.
But my sense from them is that any challenge to changes in the regulations or challenges to people being untreated, people being treated unfairly on social assistance, take an incredibly long time to go through the system.
Yeah.
You know, and when you're living in poverty, I mean, every month counts, and every check counts, as I'm sure you can imagine.
It's true. Perhaps you're living out of a shelter. Perhaps you've lost, if you have a family, perhaps you've lost custody of your kids. Perhaps you're living in an environment that threatens your health, and that goes on while you challenge it.
Absolutely. And those are exactly the kind of stories that we hear.
And now we'll take a short break with the blues.
This old boy lived down the road from me. Used to drive a beat up Dodge. Well, he showed up drunk as hell one night, parked in my garage. I had to ask him how to get so lost, but you can't find your way home. He said, I've been running round in circles so long, I didn't know where else to go. I've been running round in circles so long, I didn't know where else to go. See, his wife, she left him, took the kids, and he never was the same. I guess they were all that he'd been living for, and he shouldered all the blame. Always wondered what made her give up. God, if he'd only known. She'd been running around in circles so long, she didn't know where else to go. She'd been running round in circles so long, she She didn't know where else to go. This old boy lived down the road from me. Today they laid him in the ground. He drove that old Dodge right off the river bridge without even slowing down. And he left a letter he wrote to his old man, said I just lost control, and I've been running around in circles so long, I didn't know where else to go. And I've been running around in circles so long. I didn't know where else to go.
And now, return to our interview.
When, for instance, someone wants to stop an illegal action in business, they get an injunction. Do you feel that there should be some injunctive power for people in these situations?
I would like to think so.
Yeah.
I would like to think that our society would take this on as a basic right and a basic obligation of society.
Yeah.
To provide people with a basic level of income and
yeah.
a basic standard of living. And we're certainly nowhere near that. I mean,
no.
as I'm sure you know, welfare rates have decreased hugely in the past 10 years. I mean, since the Harris government cut welfare rates in Ontario by 22% in 95,
yeah.
there's been one 3% increase,
yeah.
Which this government brought through.
Yeah.
But even including that, overall in the past 10 years, rates have gone down by an average of about, or spending power has gone down by an average of about a third for a person living on social assistance.
Right.
And that's not to say they were adequate before.
Right.
So it leaves people in a pretty desperate situation.
What about the people on disabilities who qualify for disability assistance, I might add? Many of them are living on welfare and have suffered the full third cut. But what about the ones who didn't suffer the 22% cut? What kind of a cut have they faced?
I can't give you an exact number on that, but I can tell you that their rates have not increased over the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Which
it would seem a double-digit decrease at least.
Yes, exactly. I mean, if you factor in the change in the cost of living,
yeah.
which has been huge, and it's especially huge in big cities
like right.
Toronto, with increases in rents and losses of low-income housing, but it's definitely within the double digits.
Yeah.
I wish I understood what was going through the minister's mind at this point. I mean, I can tell you that the minister has flatly rejected our request for a meeting with her.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh.
She did, and this was, of course, after about 2 months of weekly calls to the office to follow up on the letter that we sent.
Oh.
And then we got a fairly terse reply from one of her assistants.
Did she attempt, through her assistant, to justify the refusal?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. It was a very outright and quick refusal by voicemail, just saying the minister will not be able to meet with you.
Yeah. Well, our director of special income in Hamilton, Kathy Buffett, has gone on record in The Spectator as saying that while she's empathetic to people who feel that the welfare rates are low, that this is not the intent of the special diet program,
mm-hmm.
and that as such it's an abuse of the program.
Right, which is very interesting. It's hard to know what the actual intent of the special diet program is.
Yeah.
I recently heard from a very good source that the original committee that fashioned the special diet program quite explicitly stated within its own realm that this was, that they expected this to be used as an income supplement. They expected it to be used as a way to decrease people's risk of ill health when, once they were living in poverty.
Who said this?
It's someone whose name I don't feel comfortable
revealing,
but it's someone who was involved in the original process of creating the special diet form.
Fair enough.
So it was very interesting for me to hear that, because that did speak to the original intent of this program.
Yeah?
I don't know what the Liberal government is cooking up. I know that they are bringing in a more restrictive policy, and it's imminent. I mean, it's certainly in the works and coming soon. I can only guess at what that, at how that will actually work. My best guess would say yes. I mean, what they will require is that we write in a list of a recipient's medical conditions, and that they will decide how much of a supplement that recipient receives. I would assume that poverty will not be on their list of accepted conditions.
No.
I think that's a pretty good guess to make.
Sarah Cairns wrote in the View magazine in Hamilton recently, which has a 30,000 circulation, about the special diet program. Bureaucrats are going to be making medical judgments about benefits recipients.
Yep.
Isn't that a breach of doctor-patient confidentiality? And is this government, which probably includes a fair number of doctors among sitting MPs, you'd know more about that than I would, are they comfortable with that?
That's a very good question. And you're disclosing it to someone who is in no way qualified to deal with that information. That worries me hugely. And it worries me in the sense that I think that people who don't have medical knowledge or medical experience or healthcare experience may bring many of the societal stereotypes and biases that come along with certain conditions.
Yeah.
Like mental illness, like HIV, and there's many others that we can point to.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm concerned, there's no reason for that.
No.
I think that we're already asking healthcare providers to assess people for the supplement, and I think that's appropriate. And I think we should leave it at that. I think we should leave it as something that occurs between a patient and their provider.
Yeah.
And that is a concern that we have raised.
Yeah.
We've recently sent another letter both to the medical director or the medical advisor to social systems, the chief medical advisor, and to the OMA.
Yeah.
And one of our concerns was exactly that, that this may constitute a breach of patient confidentiality. The OMA has been involved in this process of revising the form. They have a so-called forms committee that's consulted by the government, that's required to be consulted by the government on any of these changes. And again, we have asked the OMA for representation in their part side of the process, and they've refused it.
You're all medical professionals.
Absolutely.
Have they justified their refusal?
Not directly. Their take, interestingly, has been that while they certainly recognize that poverty is a significant health problem, they believe that the more imminent concern for them is that healthcare providers are being threatened by social assistance recipients who are coming in and demanding that they receive the full supplement. So they say that they want to close this loophole to take away this threat to physicians.
Unfortunately, there's probably some substance to it. And as you may know from treating people with HIV, physicians often don't recognize some of the nutritionally related conditions. How can the OMA fault patients who would go to their doctor and say, I have this condition, it requires these nutrients, I must have them?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and we certainly encourage patients to be advocates for themselves, and that's sort of in the stated goals of the new wave of medicine.
Yeah.
But when it comes to certain issues, the medical profession tends to close its ears to those types of advocates. And, you know, I think poverty is a very good example of that. And to give a more recent example, I mean, we've seen new controversy brewing around this drug Tamiflu, which is a treatment for influenza. And, of course, people on hearing about this new so-called pandemic of avian flu, which has yet to emerge.
I'm sorry, yes.
but the point is, patients have been going to physicians and advocating for themselves and, you know, requesting the physicians give them a prescription for this drug Tamiflu.
When they don't.
Then go to the pharmacy and have on hand in case this pandemic emerges. I think quite appropriately, most physicians have been saying no.
Right.
But again, this is one of those cases where, you know, patients are being strong advocates for themselves. And I haven't seen the OMA or the government stepping up and saying, well, we're now going to change the regulations and stop allowing patients to go to their physicians and ask for drugs.
Well, in fact, you know, the response, and I won't dwell on it long because it's not really strongly related, but the response is that Roche has decided to stop selling it for a while.
Well, that's right.
Yeah,
right.
That's an interesting parallel. They haven't changed the rules now for these people.
That's right. These regulatory changes are coming down the line, and effectively what this is going to result in, most importantly, is a reduction in welfare rates.
Not a literal reduction of the base welfare rate, but
no.
A practically effective reduction,
in
the total that most people receive.
Absolutely.
They could try to say, well, you have to requalify or something like that.
Right. So retroactively in that sense, yes, I wouldn't be surprised. And there is some precedent for that. I mean, as they've changed the forms over time, they have tried to make people reapply with new forms.
Yeah.
However people wish to express themselves, they should. I think the easiest way is by email or a letter or by walking down to their MPP's office or by walking down to Queen's Park. That's exactly what they should do.
Yeah.
I certainly think that larger scale organizing will be necessary around this.
Yeah.
And I know that anti-poverty groups around the province have been aware of what's going on and continue to be aware and very concerned about this. And I imagine that as this evolves, there will be a number of ongoing campaigns and actions and efforts put in place to raise awareness about this and to show the government that it's a broad-based coalition of people and a very large number of people who are concerned about this. I mean, there are nearly 800,000 people living on social assistance in this province.
Does that include people with disabilities?
That includes people with disabilities. And I would hope that this would go far beyond those 800,000, that there's far more people in this province who are concerned about poverty than just people living on social assistance.
I would hope so, too. Are there organizations to which people could go on the web? I know in Hamilton we have the Campaign for Adequate Welfare and Disability Benefits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the primary organizing force, again, behind this campaign has been the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. And I would encourage anyone to go look at their website. I mean, it's simply...
And links there.
Yeah, and there are many links there to other organizations involved in this, and there's ways to contact them to find out who they would recommend in your local community to get in contact with, to become involved with this.
All right.
And the website there is just www.ocap.ca.
ocap.ca.
Mm-hmm.
And the minister involved is Sandra Pupatello, right?
That's right. And, I mean, while she's directly involved with social assistance, I think this is something that actually transcends quite a number of ministries. So I think it would be appropriate to contact the Minister of Health, the Minister of Finance, amongst others. I mean, poverty, of course, is something that extends through all sectors.
Right. Right. I appreciate your time on the phone. Was there something that you wanted to add to what we've said?
I think that we all have an ethical, moral, and neighborly obligation to address this situation. It really is a crisis at this point and needs to be dealt with as such.
I wonder if the government has the courage to face the next election as more than conservatives in red ties.
Well, absolutely.
They need another image of their own, I think, and this might help them solidify it if they're willing to recognize medical issues among people with poverty.
That's right. And especially if we can step up and remind them that they certainly campaigned as one of the key planks in their platform was to fight poverty and to address the low social assistance rates.
Yeah, they could pick up the ball and run with it.
That's right. That's right.
Thanks, Gary.
You're absolutely welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Maybe you'll be involved when this comes back around in the legislature, and we can get back to you after the legislation's passed and see where it goes from there.
Perfect. I'd be more than happy to.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello, my friend, it's been a while. All our old clothes are back in style. We went our separate ways, only to return to face a lesson we failed to learn. We did blinded by the eyes of you. Time kept on moving, and a change has come. And you think that I don't know where you're coming from. Well, I feel just like you, and I cry just like. But I heal just like you, and under my skin I'm just like you. You gave your love and your innocence,
and they took away. Put your arms around me, I am your friend.
'Cause I feel just like you, and I cry just like you. But I heal just like you, and under my skin I'm just like you and everybody else. When I get hurt, I cry for help. And I've got secrets that God only knows. And God knows I feel just like you. And I cry just like you. I heal just like you. And I break down just like you. I feel just like you. And I cry just like you. But I'm weak just like you. And under my skin I'm just like you.
At the break from his album Natural Light, you heard Eric Bibb and Circles. At the end of the show, Keb Mo from the album Just Like You, the title song. Brian Wood will be back next week with an update, and we hope some good news for his housing situation. Come back next week for Disrespect. Disrespect asks you to send us your requests for topics about disability discrimination, and we will air those topics in our interviews. Send your suggestion to radio.stories@gmail.com. radio.stories@gmail.com. Disrespect's interviews are digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.